This is from Edinger's summary, and it's a pretty good way to digest the book without reading the whole text, because he breaks it up into different scenes. So I'll just, let's read through it together. And in the italicized descriptions are just summaries of the passages. So there's a Shulamite, and she's burnt black by the sun. And I don't think anyone really knows what that means, Shulamite. But that's what she's called. And she labors in her brother's vineyards, and she yearns for the bridegroom. And so the text starts out. This is from the Jerusalem Bible, I believe. Is that right? Yeah. I am black but lovely, daughters of Jerusalem, like the tents of Kedar, like the pavilions of Solomon. Take no notice of my swarthiness. It is the sun that has burnt me. My mother's sons turned their anger on me. They made me look after the vineyards. Had I only looked after my own. Well, the first thing is that she's imprisoned. I think I will not interpret it, because we'll be interpreting as we go along. And the Shulamite tells us that she is a captive of her brother. So you see, something is unavailable. That's the basic point. And forced to work in their vineyards. Now, that may be a good comment. You see, that's the effect of the patriarchy on the soul. The masculine keeps that feminine soul from finding its place.
Does the matriarch also the same thing?
No, the matriarch would, if it were a matriarchy, it would be the guy would be in the garden, and it would be the woman's garden.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just the opposite. Then the bridegroom comes to the Shulamite like the coming of spring. I hear my beloved. See how he comes, leaping on the mountains, bounding over the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle, like a young stag. See where he stands behind our wall. He looks in at the window. He peers through the lattice. My beloved lifts up his voice. He says to me, come then, my love, my lovely one, come. For see, winter is past, the rains are over and gone, the flowers appear on the earth. The season of glad songs has come. The cooing of the turtle dove is heard in our land. So we're going to see it's a story of an interplay between these two figures. Each tradition, the church is going to interpret it one way. Judaism is going to interpret it another way. We'll interpret it our own way. But there's a state of imprisonment, and then a redemptive masculine figure approaches. And the lowly Shulamite rises from her bed and searches the streets for her beloved. On my bed at night, I sought him whom my heart loves. I sought but did not find him. So I will rise and go through the city. In the streets and the squares, I will seek him whom my heart loves. I sought but did not find him. So this is, I think, meant to portray the complex nature of the opposites coming together. There's a sighting and then a fleeing. The Shulamite finds the bridegroom. He comes like a royal procession of King Solomon. What is this coming up from the desert like a column of smoke? Breathing of myrrh and frankincense and every perfume the merchant knows. See, it is the litter of Solomon. Around it are 60 champions, the flower of the warriors of Israel, all of them skilled swordsmen, veterans of battle. Each man has his sword at his side against alarms by night. in the fifth section, they meet in the garden. And the bridegroom praises the bride, but is wounded by her. So the idea here is that when the opposites meet, there's a mutual wounding. How beautiful you are, my love, how beautiful you are. Your eyes behind your veil are doves. Your hair is like the flock of goats frisking down the slopes of Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of shorn ewes as they come up from the washing. Each one has its twin, not one unpaired with another. Your lips are a scarlet thread and your words enchanting. Your cheeks behind your veil are halves of pomegranate. Your neck is the Tower of David, built as a fortress, hung around with 1,000 buckles. Bucklers, and each the shield of a hero. Your two breasts are two fawns, twins of a gazelle, that feeds among the lilies. And he says, the encounter in the garden includes pain as well as pleasure at the blank, but the bridegroom is wounded. You ravished my heart, my sister, my promised bride. You ravished my heart. The single one of your glances, or an alternative translation, now has wounded my heart with one of my eyes. In the sixth section, the bridegroom knocks at the Shulamite's door, but she is slowing in answering, and he is going. So again, you see the a wounding and a fleeing, a wounding and a fleeing. I sleep, but my heart is awake. I hear my beloved knocking. Open to me, my sister, my love, my dove, my perfect one, for my head is covered with dew. My locks with the drops of night. I have taken off my tunic. Am I to put it on again? See, she's just lazy. She won't answer the door.
Is that it?
Yeah. I've taken off my tunic. Am I to put it on again? I have washed my feet. Am I to dirty them again? My beloved thrust his hand through the hole in the door. I trembled to the core of my being. Then I rose to open to my beloved. Myrrh ran off my hands, pure myrrh off my fingers, onto the handle bolt. I opened to my beloved, but he had turned his back and gone. My soul failed at his flight. And as he says, the union is both desired and dreaded. From a distance, it is the source of all yearning, but knocking at our door is an object of terror. Once seen and then lost, it is occasion for despair. The Shulamite then goes in search of the lost bridegroom. I sought him, but I did not find him. I called to him, but he did not answer. The watchmen beat the Shulamite and steal her cloak. The watchmen came upon me as they made their rounds in the city. They beat me, they wounded me, and they took away my cloak, they who guard the ramparts. In 4:9, the bridegroom was wounded, now it is the bride's turn. The opposites cannot meet without wounding each other. The bride and bridegroom find each other and unite in the garden of the pomegranates. Come, my beloved, let us go to the fields. We will spend the night in the villages, and in the morning we will go to the vineyards. We will see if the vines are budding, if their blossoms are opening, if the pomegranate trees are in flower, then I shall give you the gift of my love. The united lovers are sealed to each other in eternal love. Set me like a seal on your heart, like a seal on your arm, for love is strong as death, jealously relentless as Sheol. Traditionally, as I mentioned, it's been interpreted as the relationship between the Yahweh and his people. In Christianity, the love of Christ for the church, or as the intimate experience of divine love in the human soul. This text picks it up as representative of the encounter between the Unio mentalis, which is the woman, and the body, which is the man.
Say that again, please.
This text is going to make use of it as. Wait till Mary's changed it here. This text picks it up, and the. Bride will represent the unio mentalis, and the groom will represent the body. And this blackness, see, is very, very important.
So their union is the unio corporalis?
And their union is the unio corporalis. One of my very first dreams in therapy was at a a Japanese woman was brought to me, and she was burnt black from head to toe, with third-degree burns all over her body, and I had to heal her. And my therapist said, "You ever take LSD?"
Was that the therapist you fired?
No.
No.
No. I said, "Yeah." She said, "A lot." I said, "Yeah." She said, "That's what LSD does to the soul." So it's an image of too much consciousness burning the feminine understanding, which needs to have its own space and integrity. And I think the fact that it's black here, it's black in our text, is indicative of this repressive dimension of masculine understanding, which has to always be clear and ordered and bright and understanding and verbal, in a way that was necessary in this process. Remember, because the unio corporalis, the unio mentalis, was produced by insight. But at the same time, it wounds that feminine a little bit. It burns it, because she doesn't like to be seen that way. And so the part of this then is putting that feminine back into the body, which would mean taking the understanding of the meaning of the experience, which is why it's feminine, because it's the soul in the experience, and reanimating life with it.
She'd like to be seen.
Moonlight. See, it's the sunlight that burns her. Mm-hmm. Very fascinating. It shows you how you have to work with the unconscious. Sometimes you need sunlight, which means we have to be, you know, pretty forceful with the unconscious and pretty discriminating and pretty, you might almost say, anal with it. And that's necessary, but at the same time, it doesn't allow it its full nature. You get rid of your symptoms, maybe, but you haven't understood the full nature of the unconscious. And the feminine, the moon aspect, then has to be brought in, and a second layer of understanding occur.
So that full nature would be the more paradoxical aspect.
Right. That let's say, now I'm making it a little concrete, but even in... Let's say you are overcoming an addiction, and what you really want to do is control the behavior that is being so destructive to you, and that's fair. It's a fair goal, and you learn through understanding and probably some other things how to develop the strength to not give in to those impulses. Yet, at the same time, there is part of you that you are forcibly not allowing to live, and therefore not allowing to develop.
Don't you find that out in other ways, though?
Well, it generally will try to come out in, if you're creative, in destructive ways.
I'm not getting what you're saying. How to develop strength not to give in to those impulses causes the destruction of the creativity?
Well, no, I wouldn't go that far.
But it blocks it?
It leaves part of you undeveloped. It leaves the part of you that used to be behind the behavior undeveloped.
So you're talking about, though, that you have to go to... What is it, the unio corporalis, to get past?
Yeah, see, this is getting past that.
This is still in mentalis.
That's still in mentalis. Unio mentalis, the strength is you control behavior. The weakness is you've put part of you in a closet.
Mm-hmm.
And which you have to do. You know, if you have a dream of a tiger that's going to eat you up and you find a zoo for it, you're just happy to get it in a cage. But still, you may have controlled the ravenous behavior that that tiger represented, but you still got an unhappy tiger in you. So the unio corporalis is going back and finding out, how do you make that tiger happy?
Right, and then they can let it out of the cage and have it be...
And then you can perhaps be friends with it, or...
The lamb and the tiger sleep together.
Right, exactly. And that's what this chapter is about, putting those two back together.
Putting what two back together?
The understanding which you are able now to use to keep your life from going in directions you don't want it to, and the things you had to separate from in yourself to do that. And that first stage is a very bright light. I remember, you know, I was talking to a relative of this individual, but I saw her, and she was, you know, a young woman drinking quite a bit. And I tried to be kind, and I know it didn't make any difference. And so she went to St. Vincent's Stress Center, I think it was, to the alcohol treatment program, and the guy took one look at her after she opened her mouth and said, "You make me sick, get out of here." See, that's sunlight. But that shock was what it took to get her realizing, I have a problem. That's brutal, bright light. Maybe I should have done it, I didn't. But that's sort of light you have to shine sometimes on the unconscious to get control of things. And that's why the Shulamite is burnt. That's why she's black. That's why my case, it wasn't that. It was like that I was just shed too much consciousness on my soul through these drug experiences. Thinking one has control of them and one doesn't. So that's a little bit of background. And I think you can see that dimension in the fact that the Shulamite's black in the story, burnt by the sun.
Well, that would make sense if you look at it historically with, you know, the Roman world and that bright light having to be shown at that point so intensely because mm-hmm. it was so brutal.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I think you could say Christianity was a very, very, very bright light, which helped us control ourselves but put a lot of stuff of ourselves away.
Well, what did you say to that alcoholic? Did that fit in here? That came in and said, "There's no way I can help you. You need to spare it."
That's actually what he said to Bill, I think. You know, he said to Bill, "Your problem is you're a hopeless alcoholic." Quote unquote.
I mean, that's pretty brutal.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal. Mm-hmm.
But think of your point. Yeah.
Okay. Imagine being told that your problem is you're hopeless. Unless, then, of course, he mitigated. Unless you can start a group,
yeah.
And that's how AA got started. So that's a very bright light. So now, I wanted to give you a sense of the Song of Songs. I wanted to give you a sense of why it's a Shulamite, why she's dark. Because our text now is going to pick up this story as its backbone.
Could you speak just a little bit about on noticing the difference from what we normally think about masculine and feminine? The feminine is the mentality, and the masculine is the body.
Yeah.
Which is just opposite.
It's no opposite of what we normally think of.
Right.
Why is that? A question flashed through my mind when I was reading it, but I didn't stop to answer it. I'm not sure I can give you a complete answer.
Well, Sophia is associated with logos, insight. Perhaps it's because they're concentrating on the meaning aspect.
For some reason, the meaning aspect of the Sophia experience is personified as feminine. That's what I think we have to get out of this chapter.
Traditionally, it was personified as masculine.
I would say traditionally. Remember the dream of the young boy that I read you as Hermes? Normally, I would say that meaning is personified by Hermes, by what Jung calls a puer eternus, usually a lovely young boy, symbolizes the meaning. I don't know this for sure, but I would guess that because we are dealing with a transposition of values, that's why it's flipped. You know, if you go back to that, some of you maybe have seen it, that early Egyptian picture of the universe where the sky is bent over, I think she's on her knees, Nu is bent over on her knees, and her torso and her hands form the cosmos, and her breasts hangs down. She's the sky. So the sky in Egypt was female. We think of the sky as male. And the earth was symbolized as male. Now, Christianity came along and flipped it. The sky became masculine, earth became feminine. And it could be that this Sophia experience is again a flip, that the sky as the meaning factor is feminine. Well, at least this text picks up the feminine aspect of the meaning. But I think that does fit in a way, because what is soul? I think soul is what you extract from emotional instincts, from emotional experience. The warmth, let's say, in African-American music, Motown, my generation music, say, that's all from instinct. That's, when we say soul music, I think it's a pretty good definition of what we mean by soul. That emotional warmth, spontaneity, affection, and that comes out of a transformed instinct. You don't get it if you just live the instincts in promiscuity. People are being very sexual, but they're cold as heck to each other. You don't get it if you repress the instincts. But if you try to experience your instincts and your emotion and carry them until you get the meaning out of them, then that's what soul is. That's how you get this caring lightness and playfulness that a child has, again. And that's what I would call soul. So I think it fits. So see, the Shulamite here would be the understanding that has come out of the experience thus far. The Shulamite would be in the couple of chapters earlier, the knowledge of a new image of God. She'd be personifying the knowledge of the fact that there's a house that has the light of the sun and moon in it. She represents that new understanding that the unconscious wanted to convey to him, and now we're trying to understand.
That's the sun and moon united.
The light of the sun and moon united, right. It's a new understanding. And she's a personification of that new understanding. Now, it's one thing to understand it. It's another to live it. And this chapter then, when these two unite and the body takes wings, will be when the soul is transferred to the body, and it becomes winged in one of these examples, that would be when that experience actually determines the way you live, and the way you feel, and the way you behave, I can think of that, the dream again of that woman I told you about. In her case, what it led to, she quit her job, divorced her husband, has gone back to school, and is in a new relationship. And she said, I don't want a relationship based on power. I want a relationship based on mutual respect and love and sharing. You see, that's the feminine. So that the actual shift in her behavior would be the winged body, as we will see it. So you've got two dilemmas. First, you've got to let this darn insight come into you, which is often not easy because it's very threatening and anxiety-producing when you realize everything you've accomplished up to now has got to be reevaluated. And then you have to do something about it, which is even harder. Okay, 362. As she says there at the beginning, this chapter leans heavily on the Song of Songs. And then she says what some of the traditional interpretations are. I thought I'd just mention one thing. I just love this part. In a sermon, Origen is one of those church fathers. Says very aptly that one must first have left Egypt and crossed the Red Sea before one could interpret the canticles.
What is the canticles?
Oh, Song of Songs. Another word for Song of Songs, yeah. Okay. You want to try and put that in your own words?
Now, what was that symbol the Red Sea standing for?
That's my question.
That's the pathway to that new, leaving that old self, moving through all the terror of,
yeah,
you know,
terror, I think.
Right.
It's terror.
And then embracing it to get through the stuff, right?
Terror, which you are able to survive because your intent to change is pure. And if your intent to change is not pure, want to do it to be more popular or make more money or get into another snazzier crowd, you'll drown. You'll be an Egyptian. The terror will do you in. And he himself had passed through the spiritual wilderness. Down at the bottom of the page, evidently the appearance of the King of Glory at the end of the preceding parable, remember that, was so overpowering that the author was flung back into the darkness. Next sentence, let's skip a sentence. This renewed darkening of consciousness may have been induced by the communion with the divine second Adam at the end of the last parable.
Now, does that mean, since they said the second Adam was supposed to be Christ?
The second Adam would be the awareness of the meaning in the experience. And it's personified in several different images. Christ, second Adam, what did they say? That's why I read that. Filius Filiciform.
When you think about it, if you have a cup of crusty old water, you know,
with all the crust on it, and you pour this new water, or this new life, or this new whatever source coming in, it's going to create all the sediment, it's going to break it all apart, which creates a lot of, to me, that darkness, what they're talking about. Additionally, that comes in to clear it up. You know what I mean? When initially gets poured in, or that awareness comes in, everything kind of gets havoc. Because you're everything you believed in is all of a sudden then put at, you know, perspective, you know, and then to move forward and to let go. That's what Thomas could let go, right, Gary?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's the overpowering nature of that experience that creates the darkness again. Kind of what we were saying before. She just said it in different words.
Well, that still confuses me about the second Adam.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a lot more. Okay, would that go with the, you know, the inner life? I asked that question last time. And it talks so much about the inner life and the second Adam. So the experience would affect your inner life.
Yeah, and if you're not used to it, the intensity of that new thing would be upsetting.
Okay.
I believe that's what they're driving at.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay, she says, 363, be turned to me with all your heart. And do not cast me aside because I am black and swarthy. You can see why they make the link to the Song of Songs. Because the sun hath changed my color, and the waters covered my face, and the earth hath been polluted and defiled in my works. We'll look at a couple passages together.
Right below that sheet. Quotes from a quotation from Joel.
Yeah.
Is that the Hebrew Bible, or what is that?
Joel, yeah. Mm-hmm. What is that quote? Now, therefore, saith the Lord, be converted to me with all your heart. What she's going to do is she's going to be linking up. You see, she's going to be linking up this with an image of God. But when experience is overpowering, that's what happens. Everything begins to be blended with everything. And there's a sense where she's wisdom, there's a sense where she's God, and there's a sense where she is meaning. And that leaves the rational mind uncomfortable because it wants to say, well, is it this or this? But it's all of the above. And what we'll try to do is understand how is it this, how is it this, how is it this, as we go along here. How can it be all these different things at the same time?
Hey, Gary, you saw this too, talking about like, be converted to me with all your heart. You're going back to the pure attention of, you know, pure attention, removing all the admixtures.
Yes.
So that's part of that experience of breaking up all the... So we kind of come into a pure aesthetic pattern so we can have get that pure intention.
For the earth had been polluted and defiled my works, for there was darkness over it, because I stick fast in the mire of the deep, and my substance is not disclosed. Wherefore out of the depths I have cried, and from the abyss of the earth with my voice to all you that pass by the way. I skipped down a paragraph. Attend and see me, if any shall find one like unto me, I will give into his hand the morning star. For behold, in my bed by night I sought one to comfort me, and I found none. I called, and there was none to answer me. Okay, let's go through it. Backward to 363.
That reminds me of Revelations 2 about giving the morning star. I know that part at the end.
Somebody used Christ saying it, but then you have the same thing as the fear. To me, you know, saying that I would give thee the morning star.
Is that the very end of Revelation?
Yes.
Is it? Here, the bride, or the prima materia, or its soul, is speaking. Now, do you understand what it means by the soul, the prima materia? We know all these things. These are just different words for what we've been saying. What's the prima materia of this experience? No, yeah, what's the prima, what's the prima materia of the Sophia experience?
Emotion.
Yeah, this is the difficult beginning. Right. The, the first material. The raw emotions. And the greater would be another word for it. And the soul would be the meaning of the experience. So we're always working with these two levels, the experience and its meaning. Now, that reference to Joel, she says, brings in that this is related to an image of God. And go down 1, 2, 3, 4 lines, where God, or at any rate his feminine aspect, appears as the spirit or soul in matter and awaits redemption by the work of man. So, the reason that the Shulamite is equated with God is because the Shulamite represents the feminine aspect of the prevailing image of God. Origen identifies the black bride of the Song of Songs with Miriam, the second wife of Moses. Now, that is news to me. I don't know anywhere that Miriam is Moses' wife. Do you? Sister.
This is not, but it's a different one.
Is it a different Miriam?
Yeah. Because he was in a different country.
That was Zipporah.
Oh.
As far as I know, the story goes like this, and I checked through all my references, and I couldn't figure this out. But maybe somebody knows the Bible better than me, which wouldn't be saying all that much. But Moses fell in love with a Ethiopian woman, Zipporah. And Miriam got mad, and she and her brother cursed him. And God got mad at her and made her a leper. This is biblical. And then Moses, I think, and Aaron prayed for her, and God reversed it. So she's equating the Shulamite with Miriam. Why? And what's that to tell us?
So off the top, I'm saying that Miriam is that aspect of reality, that judgmental, uptight part of herself, that, you know, I mean, she's coming saying you're wrong.
Well, not exactly, but you're on the right track.
Okay.
It's more Miriam is leper.
Oh, okay.
You know, I've been grossed out twice in my life. I won't tell you about the one. But the one I can tell you about is leprosy. I've never seen leprosy. It is the most disgusting to watch people sit there and pick black flesh off their body. It's just the most vile thing. I almost threw up. Well, I think it's the disgusting aspect of the experience. That the Sophia experience is, can be, at least, can be disgusting to your sense of right and wrong. So that's why, all she's doing now, she's amplifying and trying to give us different images for what we've already talked about. But that it really, that the Sophia experience, as we said last time, is a mess. And here Miriam is the mess. But it's a mess that transforms back.
I'm studying about the Eleusis, and one of the first things that they do is they have a day where they tell dirty jokes and they're talking.
Mm.
Balbo. Yeah.
Bette Midler.
Yeah. Is that the same thing?
I think it's very similar. Very similar.
That makes sense because they couldn't understand.
That's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah.
They sit around and tell dirty jokes. Right. That was the first day of the religious festival.
Right.
I like that.
Okay.
But it shows how they, you see, they hadn't had the split yet. Mm-hmm. That the spiritual and the vulgar were really two dimensions of the same thing.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, I always think of Balbo as Bette Midler as a modern Balbo. That same dimension of earthy, vulgar, but not tasteless, you know,
right.
With taste. Almost.
Oh.
Almost with taste. Just enough that you can accept it. And that would be, you know, that could be, that's another, Miriam of leprosy, Balbo, these dark and generally disregarded and marginalized images of the feminine are part of the beginning. Nothing new, we're just getting new images for what we've been saying. What Sandy was referring to in alchemy. See where I am there, the next line down. The black woman is an embodiment of the Negredo, or the Umbra Solis, or the new moon darkened by the sun.
Do you happen to know what that image is, the moon darkened by the sun? How does the new moon get darkened by the sun in the I can't remember what that image is.
I brought along Jung's comment. Let me see if I can dig it out of there. Let's just go back a little bit. That is the embodiment of the Negredo. That makes sense, right? The Umbra Solis.
Shadow of the sun.
I am thinking, Carol, that, you know, if you could imagine an eclipse. Here's the Earth, here's the Sun, and here's the Moon. The eclipse of the Sun would be the Earth gets in the way of the Sun.
No, the Moon gets in the way of the Sun, if it's an eclipse of the Sun.
No, I'm thinking of an eclipse of the Moon.
Oh, okay, yeah, the Earth gets in the way.
So the Earth, you know, we would say that the Earth's shadow is causing the eclipse. But the primal mind would say that's the shadow of the sun falling on the moon, making it dark.
What puzzles me is they say the new moon, the nova luna. Of course, in that phase, you can't have an eclipse. So I wonder what they're referring to. The moon has to be in total.
I was thinking they were saying that an eclipse of the moon was the new moon.
Okay.
I'm not sure. Let me see. I draw along the two references that she... references in Jung, and whenever I'm going to Mysterium, I always go to Edinger first. And if you can hold that thought, this is going to sound like I'm taking you on a diversion, but I think it'll help by an example bring it back. He's talking about a particular text. This particular text of Paracelsus. This is a Mysterium Lectures, page 125. This particular text emphasizes only the negative aspect of the moon. Yet that negative aspect is a reality, because for the immature ego, the contrasexual archetypal principle is experienced as very dangerous, as a very dangerous and threatening entity that must be guarded against. A classic example of that came to my attention many years ago. I was working with a young man, and we had reached a stage where the personal unconscious had been pretty well analyzed. Then he had a dream of just one sentence, and he awoke in terror. The sentence was, "Psychoanalysis is of the moon." A short time later, he decided he had enough analysis for the time being and terminated. You see, he wasn't ready for the moon. His psychology corresponded to this level of text we're talking about. If he looked at the moon, he'd be poisoned. The same thing happens in feminine psychology. If a young woman has too heavy an encounter with the solar principle, it can terrify her. Now, if we apply that to this, the moon's blackness is experienced as threatening and destructive. Or if you want to put it in a slightly different way, the threatening and destructive aspect of the feminine is personified by the dark moon. What's that mean in ordinary language? That the feminine doesn't have straight lines. And if you live your life by straight lines, her presence can just get you so depressed you can't cope. Because your previous way of coping doesn't work anymore. And that is at the same time a consciousness that does not see. That's the black sun, the shadow of the sun.
So at the same time, you do not have well-developed consciousness.
Right, and the moon's presence, the feminine presence, is destructive. And that the destructiveness of the feminine presence is the same thing as you're going through life with a point of view that doesn't see. That's the umbra solis. I know this is weird stuff, so don't be satisfied until you're satisfied. You know, where I see it most, his example, I think, gives you a pretty good example of the darkness of the moon, meaning that moon, which is generally a positive thing, is actually threatening. That's what the darkness means. The feminine experience leads not to insight, but to so much anxiety that it's a destructive experience.
Amen.
Pardon?
Amen.
I think for men and women, but here we're looking at the masculine psychology. Probably typically for men. Wouldn't want to limit it to that, but the female equivalent would be the umbra solis, and you see this of daughters of powerful men who were corrupt. They have an animus that is very efficient at coping, but he simply does not see what he's doing. So these women go from one experience to the other, which seems to be offering either power if she's culturally developed, or excitement if she's not culturally developed. And you can hear her talk about things, and you realize that she is seeing things very, very in a way that she can talk about, but she doesn't see them. That's the dark sun. There is a level of understanding which doesn't see.
Kind of too, this little one down here talks about the holy soul perceives the fallenness of her sins. I mean, could it mean also that the new moon is darkened by the sun? I mean, you really realize what you've done, and you're in that deep depression, and that whole, you know what I mean? I do think but you're feeling that whole sense of that darkness.
Yeah, but see, if you're there, you're past what they're talking about.
Okay. But, I mean, this the soul.
Well, what he was trying to get at is that the, maybe I should temper that. Let me try to back up and see if I can summarize this a little bit. The black woman, which would be the meaning of the experience, can be dissolving because she is so feminine.
What?
She can be dissolving because she's so feminine. That would be the black moon, or the new moon. Is this making it worse?
No, I'm not following you.
Oh dear, I'm trying to make it better.
Is the black woman?
See, be turned with me to with all your heart. I am black and swarthy.
But that was because she was in prison. And
Dissolving in quotes here is what you mean.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
On one hand, but on the other hand, because she's in that state, when she does come up, she dissolves the ego. Okay. If the ego is not ready to deal with it.
And that would be the lightning?
No, that would be that she is still the negredo.
Yeah. So she was totally destroyed. Is that word like something like commit suicide?
This is where, yeah.
Okay.
Somebody might have ruined a relationship, and then they finally become aware how they've ruined the relationship, and then burdened by that guilt, they kill themselves. That would be that would be the destructive aspect of the dark moon.
I was unhappy over his relationship with his wife, and I killed five people, including myself. Last week, I think. Man down in Lagodi, Indiana.
Oh, right. Yeah. That would be the dark moon.
Yeah.
See, he was. The dark moon would be the depressive unhappiness that he had about his life, and then it ended up destroying everything. Because he wasn't able to stop and reflect, what steps do I need to take to solve this problem? So you see, when there's a weakness of an ego and this dark experience, the ego doesn't have the strength to stop and problem solve. How do I deal with this without causing damage? That's what they're trying to get at. And all she's saying is, this can be one dimension of the unio corporalis, unio mentalis. And that's why the text personifies the woman as black. Maybe we should just leave it at that. There's more there, but leave it at that. Oh my gosh, I lost completely track of time. What I was just trying to get across is what the ambivalence of the meaning of black. On the one hand, it's that it's been held captive. On the other hand, that its presence is threatening. And we try to spell that out, probably in a confusing way, but if you can just live with the idea how threatening and disorienting the experience of that meaning can be, I think you'll have got the basic idea. So, if you read up maybe, what, through 374, maybe? I think for a while we're going to have to go slow again, but then some pages we can pick up and go quickly. But a couple of these things are kind of tricky. Next time's our last time before September.